Something's going on in the woods. Something's going on.
They're not dogs. They're not coyotes. What could it be, right?
I had an encounter with a skunk ape, and it completely altered the course of my life.
I found a skull. Are you guys going to want to come film this?
Put him out.
Sighting of a UFO hovering over a barn.
Millie woke up from a dream, and when I went into the bedroom, she said there's a monster on the wall.
They saw that the creature had run through a barbed wire fence. They were able to obtain hairs. They sent the hairs to their lab, and it came back as an unknown creature.
What is up, guys, and welcome to the most bizarre show on the internet. I am the one that they call Shane.
And I'm Oren.
Just Oren. I'm going to just exclusively make sure you say that it's just Oren.
Okay. J-O. Just Oren.
J-O. J-O. And what's the UF Oren? That's the one we got to do for bizarre inquiries. That's it. So to get everything rolling today, don't really have anything as far as news and updates go. Just wanted to throw in real quick that if you guys aren't already checking it out, don't forget to go and check out our March Madness Cryptid Brawl tournament. The first episode, unfortunately, the video got a little bit messed up, so I wasn't able to publish it as video onto YouTube, but I definitely dropped the audio. The audio sounds great. I thought it turned out great. But hopefully for the next ones, there'll be video as long as we don't have any other issues. But no matter what, we'll have the audio. So don't forget to check that out. Let us know what you guys think about it because we want to keep improving on it and make it so that we can essentially make it into something that we do semi-regular. Since you guys already kind of know what it's all about, like for Halloween and stuff, I was thinking we could do like a ghost version of it or something, but we want to keep critiquing it. So we definitely got to get some feedback from you guys. So don't forget to do that. And make sure you guys keep tabs on who is the top brawler for anybody that may have thrown in their option. Unfortunately, that is closed now, so nobody else can hop in, but you guys can hop in on the next one. So don't forget to check it out and stay tuned for what's going on with that one in the future.
And as always, you guys know the drill. Follow Bizarre Encounters and Open Minds Media on Instagram and Facebook. And also check us out on YouTube and TikTok. And don't forget to check out Bizarre Inquiries, like Shane said, and submit any questions you want us to inquire about. It can be something serious. It can be something jokey. It can be something not even paranormal related. But submit questions for that and then join the discussion on Discord.
And if anybody has an encounter to report, you guys can report those to OMMEncounterReports@outlook.com, or you guys can go to the link tree, fill the submission form specifically for that. But I don't care how big, I don't care how small, I want to hear about it, whether it's UFO, paranormal, cryptid related, no matter what it is. And, you know, either one, we can read it on the show, give you guys a big shout out, have you as a guest on the show. If you're somewhat close to one of us, maybe we can actually go and investigate it. But it all depends on, you know, what you want to do with it. If you just want to talk about it simply, then that's totally cool with me, too. But just don't forget to report those encounters. And I know that this is a little bit out of context, but it reminded me because we were talking about reporting an encounter. We do have one news and update. Oren is I'll let you say your quick news and update because you have something exciting that happened that we totally kind of skipped over.
Well, I'll let you announce it since it's kind of your thing.
That is true. But okay, so everybody knows that I am one of the Fortean researchers for Phantoms and Monsters, helping out Lon Strickler, who is our guest that we had last week on the show for anybody that was listening. And after the wonderful conversation, Oren got invited to become one of the Fortean researchers for Phantoms and Monsters. So not only am I one, Oren is also one. We're both researchers for Phantoms and Monsters. So again, just another reason to report those encounters so we can go and investigate them. Yeah, and congratulations, by the way, on the show. Just had to say that.
Man. A big shout out and a thank you to Lon for giving me the opportunity. Super stoked to dive in and start investigating some shit. So.
Cross your fingers. You got to report those ones from Michigan and North Carolina because that's the only way we're going to be able to do it. So don't forget to report those to him and report them to us, of course.
There you go.
And if anybody wants to support the show, a couple different ways to do so. Number one, go and check out the Patreon. Over there, you'll get a bunch of really cool exclusive content. You'll also get exclusive giveaways happening, exclusive merch store discounts, a bunch of cool stuff. I'm always editing, trying to adjust the tiers, trying to make it so that it's exactly what you guys want. So that's always a work in progress, but awesome way to support the show all the same. And if you guys just want to see what it's all about, the $3 and the $5 tier have a 7-day free trial, so you guys can go and check that out and see what it's all about before you officially sign up. And the OMM merch store, don't forget to go and check that out if you want to get stuff for Inquiries of Our Reality, Bizarre Encounters, any of our cool cryptid designs. I recently dropped 5 new designs that aren't necessarily podcast related. I have one with a Sasquatch that says follow the trail or follow the tracks. I have one that has a ghostly apparition figure on it that says investigate the paranormal. Got one with a mushroom on it that says expand your consciousness. Got one with a UFO on it with some guy kind of looking from like the distance, and it says watch the skies. And then what's the other one I got? Oh yeah, I have one that says question your reality, and it has this like head with like space and stuff behind it. But I'm trying to coordinate not just having podcast related designs, so if you guys dig that kind of stuff more so than just the podcast stuff, let me know and I can keep working on stuff like that. But OMM merch store, great way to support the show. And if anybody is also interested in any podcast production services, I am now offering those through Open Minds Media. So whether you're trying to start a podcast, you don't feel like editing your podcast, you need some video stuff done, you need some audio stuff done, some ads made, logos, any of that cool stuff, hit me up on Open Minds Media and we can work something out, get you a quote. And like I said, it doesn't matter if you're starting a podcast or if you're somebody that's already been doing it for a while and you want to make your job easier, I'm here. So shoot me a message and let me know.
And a big shout out and thank you to our sponsors as well, Rick and Hans with I Know Squatch. They're always killing it with their Squatch gear needs. And Joe at Cryptoteology, killing it with his wearable cryptid favorite. See, I pulled a Jenny. I said wearable cryptids.
Wearable cryptids. I forgot about that one. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, that's a throwback, guys.
And Snarly Yow for a fantastic smoky cedar with a hint of mint, beard oil, beard balm, body wash and beard shampoo. Definitely worth going and checking out. Dave is absolutely fantastic. Throws a lot of awesome cryptid related events too. So if anybody is somewhat near the West Virginia area, don't forget to go and check out his Instagram and possibly look for some fun stuff for you guys to do as far as going to conventions and stuff. And to all my paranormal investigators out there, don't forget to go and check out Dimension Devices. It is the all-in-one paranormal investigating device. Absolutely fantastic. I love it. I use it every single time that I go out. He recently updated it where there was a framework update. He also made it so that there is an app or an app in the works. Like, it's available to use through the web browser right now, but it should be hopefully available soon on the Android store. I think it's already available on the Apple store, but he's just making it more compatible, making it an even better device, always working on it. And if anybody has any technical questions about it, hit up Barry over there on Dimension Devices. He's the guy that developed and programmed it, so he'll be able to answer any of your guys' technical questions. And if you guys want to help us out in the process, don't forget to use our affiliate link. It goes towards the show, helps out greatly, and we appreciate you guys for using it.
And all the shit we've mentioned is in the link tree in the show descriptions. So tonight's episode is one that Shane kind of researched and took the reins on. Something kind of different. I was not familiar with the topic, so I'm kind of interested to hear about it and dive into this awesome topic. So Shane, why don't you take it away, sir?
So today, guys, I was trying to mix it up a little bit, trying to cover something that I haven't heard a lot of people cover. We had a lot of good feedback on the DMT episode, so I kind of figured maybe I should do some more of this off the wall stuff because you guys really dig it. This was something that I came across just on accident. You know, as anybody that listens to Inquiry knows, mainly talk about it in the beginning. I'm a big anime fan, so I kind of, you know, dig some of like the Japanese folklore through that. So I ended up writing an episode about a Japanese folklore legend called the Kunikuni, which was, again, something I kind of heard in passing, but I felt that it would be a perfect topic for us to cover because I haven't really heard too many other people talk about it. And it also seems like it kind of fits a lot of archetypes for other possible creatures. So if you guys are interested in stuff like this, let me know, and I can do more of these urban legends from around the world type things, because I know that we have a lot of listeners out there from a bunch of different countries. So I want to make sure I include all you guys. Don't just touch America. I know that we stay pretty much within the top 10 as far as natural science goes for Hong Kong. So we got a big following over there in China. So we got to make sure that we do a Chinese episode pretty soon here. Also, Australians. The Australians absolutely love us over there, too. We love you guys down under, man. So we got to make sure that we cover one of your guys' urban legends, too. But those are both on the roster. China and Australia. But for now, we're going to cover the Japanese folklore of the Kunikuni. Well, urban legend. So, what is the Japanese Kunikuni urban legend? Well, It is a spine-tingling urban legend that has captivated the imagination of many in Japan. Often touted as the most terrifying urban legend, it revolves around a supernatural being that reportedly haunts the countrysides and sometimes even the streets of Japanese cities. But what is the truth behind the legend? Before we dive deeper, let's first understand what the term kunikuni means. In Japanese, kunikuni is an onomatopoeic word meaning to twist, to wiggle, or to mender, describing something moving in a serpentine-like manner, which is often associated with the urban legend. And the kunikuni is said to resemble a slender, white, humanoid shape, like a paper mannequin or a piece of fine fabric. It is said that the being can be found at lunchtime during hot days. The kunikuni lingers in widely extended rice fields or acres. In rare cases, it might be found over open sea. Its limbs are said to wiggle permanently as if there was a straight gust of wind, and even if it was a windless day, it still wiggles. This behavior gave the being the name, the Japanese name, kunikuni.
So what I kind of picture is like one of those like car dealership wacky inflatable arm man or whatever Peter Griffin says.
That's a good thing to imagine because that's honestly
that's
the kind of
like
picture
the
that I got.
Image I get.
Or yeah. I've kind of gotten like just because they describe it as being on the edge of the of a field, I almost like imagine like a clothesline with like a blanket or something over it that kind of is just doing this like continuous movement to it, you know, being caught in the wind because it's a big open field and gusts go across, but. That's exactly how I imagined it, but still fascinating all the same because it's kind of whimsical and doesn't have like a definite shape or thing to it, which again kind of fits in with a lot of the interdimensional stuff we've been talking about lately about these beings not necessarily having like a definite shape within our reality. So
yeah, for sure.
The kunikuni allegedly can only become visible from a distance. Witnesses may see field workers or others close to a kunikuni who do not seem to be aware of it. In some variations, if an individual tries to look up at it close, they will go insane. In other versions, if someone touches it or simply comes too close, the kunikuni will kill them. Even looking at it from a distance for too long is said to be unwise. If someone does not approach or make contact with the kunikuni, it is said that the kunikuni will ignore them. According to the tales, those who are unfortunate enough to encounter the kunikuni are cursed. The curse is said to bring forth a string of misfortune ranging from accidents, illness, to financial ruin, and even possibly death.
Ooh. So I think that's kind of interesting because, you know, this is something we've talked about with kind of these urban legends and even some cryptid sightings like, you know, the black shuck, kind of black dog type stuff. This idea that if you encounter one of these things, you're cursed and, you know, bad luck, financial ruin can follow you. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And the other thing that I thought was interesting is up at the beginning of this paragraph when you were talking about how some people seem to be able to see these beings, but other people can't. So that kind of goes back to some of the stuff we've been talking about recently as far as like light spectrum and stuff like that. So just a couple stray thoughts there.
Continuously tying stuff together, man. Like I said, it kind of touches like the interdimensional concept that, you know, if people aren't necessarily aware of it, some people's cones in their eyes are a little bit different. And we've even talked about this with like the paranormal that like you'll have two people that'll encounter a being. One person will see it as a shadow person. The other person will see it as like a white apparition. So I'm kind of curious if it, again, it depends on like a person's eyes. Or maybe it's your brain itself and how it tries to like fill in a blank with something that they know is there, but it kind of has to like pick up on it. Or maybe, again, there's something that exists within a light spectrum that our brains can't pick up. And other people's eyes, again, having more cones, might be a little bit more capable of kind of filling in the blanks versus somebody who has less cones. So they just kind of fill it in as like an all black object rather than like actually having any type of like definition to it.
Well, and I don't know, I can't remember if this is something we've talked about on the show or something I've just run across, so correct me if it's something we've talked about on the show, but isn't there something with like, it's like scientifically proven that women can see more colors than men can or something like that? So, I mean, that's kind of, there is a little bit of basis in scientific fact for these kind of harebrained things we're throwing against the wall, you know?
I think I remember reading something along the lines that it said the average male has about two cones and the females have, I think it's like 3 to 4. So they can almost see twice as many colors as us essentially. And I haven't seen this not true to anybody, but every guy, it seems, has two colors that they mix up, and they may not even be aware of it until like their girlfriend points it out one day. But like, even for me with myself, I've noticed that I mix up certain shades of brown and green where they look the same to me. And even like, we have this these cleaners that we have in the kitchen, and my girlfriend and my kid both see them as, well, my daughter sees them as, one's blue, one's purple. When I put the bottles next to each other, they look like they're pretty much the same color to me. So it's like, I see this stuff all around, and I'm just, honestly, at this point, dude, I'm just curious like how other people see colors and stuff, because it's like, I'm used to my perspective of stuff. So it's just like, can you imagine seeing twice as many colors and actually being able to differentiate stuff?
Well, and that's one of those things, like, how would we know? You know, how do you describe to somebody what colors look like? It, you know, like, there's really no way to prove it or disprove it.
I mean, I don't know if you had the same thing that happened with your glasses, but, like, I went years without glasses, and I didn't have any standard of comparison. So, like, I couldn't see stuff. I just thought that's how everybody saw. And then, like, one day I was in the back of class, and I told the teacher I couldn't see red on the whiteboard, and then I had to go and get an eye test, and then I put on glasses, and I was like, holy crap, this is how other people see? Like, what do you mean? Like, I've been living the past, like, 15 years of my life just seeing blurry everything, and I just thought that was what everything looked like. Like, what the hell, man? The encounters with the Kuni Kuni are reported to be particularly terrifying. Witnesses claim that they feel an overwhelming sense of dread and unease, as if their very presence is being scrutinized by an otherworldly force. Some people have even reported feeling an inexplicable compulsion to follow the Kuni Kuni despite their fear. So it lures them in. It sounds a lot like a fae being, right?
Well, and we get this overwhelming sense of dread or fear that we talk about with, you know, we talked about it with Mothman, and it's a big thing with Dogman. So, you know, just more boxes being checked with this thing that we talk about all the time.
Just missing the sulfur smell, man. That's like the other main detail it's missing. The implications of this urban legend are so profound that some stories emphasize the importance of avoiding eye contact or engaging with the Kuni Kuni in any way. Failing to adhere to these warnings is believed to invite the curse upon oneself or even one's family. Now, while these stories are undoubtedly fascinating, it's essential to take a closer look at the history and origin of the Kuni Kuni legend. In reality, the Kuni Kuni is believed to have gained prominence during the late 20th century, an era marked by technological advancement that fueled the dissemination of urban legends. The Kuni Kuni first appeared in a short horror story posted on 2chan in 2001. The story was well received, inspiring other users to share their own similar stories. Quickly becoming a hot topic on 2chan's Folklore and Mythology board and the Occult board, who created threads dedicated to the Kuni Kuni. Due to so much attention, several stories of various experiences with the Kuni Kuni were posted, and the variation of urban legends increased. Soon after, the topic spread to several external websites and was picked up by the occult writers, publishers, and magazines. It is further developed in a form of audio, images, video, etc., which begs the question of if it's a tulpa, which is a concept in mysticism and the paranormal of a being or object, usually a monster, which is created through spiritual or mental powers, created by so much projected thought on it, or if it's something that's been around and has gone by other names, or even simply just a Japanese ghost story.
So I think there's a lot of good stuff to unpack in this section. First off, the whole tulpa concept. We talked about that a little bit in our Mothman series.
I thought it was funny that I wrote this, and then you dropped that the following week, and then it just happened to be like right after. Like, that was like perfect timing that happened.
Yeah, but no, I think this whole idea of like thought forms and basically being able to manifest physical monsters that can interact with reality, that's fascinating to me. So that was number one. And number two, this whole background on the Kuni Kuni, it sounds a lot to me like the whole Slender Man.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a Japanese version of it.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that kind of lends some credence to this tulpa, or maybe like this is some sort of archetype that people are just tapping into.
See, I'm kind of curious, too, if some of these beings that don't pop up until they become popular on the internet, if it might be one of those things that we've talked about, the idea about things being able to change form, maybe not necessarily physically, but being able to like project a thought of looking like this on somebody. So like once something's out in the air, it's on the internet, it's everywhere. Like, I'm curious if there's beings that already exist that choose to take the form of these things so that they can maybe go uncovered, and instead they're being looked at under another name. So it kind of gives them their privacy, their seclusion still, because you're looking for this monster. They look like this one, and they just kind of show you this and what you want to see or what they think that you might be the most scared of. And then they just kind of go off and do their own thing. So, I mean, definitely a possibility on that one too.
Yeah. So kind of, at least how I perceive it is, you know, these archetypes are manifested either through like thought forms or the Tulpa idea, whatever. And then, you know, this other thing like fairies, demons, whatever you want to call it, can almost like inhabit those thought forms, maybe.
I mean, this thing, at least from a lot of the descriptions, if it's going to fit in that, I don't want to necessarily categorize it, but if it was going to be close to something else, I would say it's a lot like fey beings. And it seems like fey beings more often than not have the ability to either one, change forms, or two, project a thought form onto somebody else. So, I mean, that's definitely a possibility that you take into consideration that this thing might be something that's coming from like the fey realm.
And that's something we've talked about on the show a lot. You know, I believe that a lot of this activity that kind of gets lumped into the paranormal, I think whatever the thing behind these fey legends and tales is responsible for a lot of this. So I think, you know, that falls right in line with kind of what I feel about a lot of the paranormal. You know, I think there are Bigfoots, there are, you know, aliens, there are whatever, but I think whatever this fey thing is responsible for a lot of paranormal activity.
I mean, I'm kind of curious too, if the fey might be actually some type of higher dimensional being rather than like a parallel dimensional being. And maybe they don't necessarily have a physical form within our reality, and then they're able to come into this reality and, like, again, kind of change their form or pick their form or only let you see them from a certain angle that they look a particular way, and then you kind of associate it with something else, you know?
Yeah, they could just be they exist as some sort of energy, and then, you know, like we say, wearing masks or whatever, they can project that visage or appearance or whatever they want to.
I mean, I've even talked about this with shadow people about kind of making a theory that they come from like some type of like void dimension, and within that void dimension, things are potentially shapeless. So when they come into our reality, they choose to take the form of or shape of something in our reality so that you can associate it and it's not just like a black blob on the wall. I mean, I definitely think that it could be something like that, that there's these other realities that exist where there isn't a set physical form to begin with at all.
Yeah. I mean, like we've been talking about a lot lately, all this, or a lot of it seems to boil down to energy and vibrations, and who knows how that energy is going to manifest itself in our reality.
I mean, if you want to talk about like vibrations and frequencies and stuff too, this thing constantly has like the moving to it. I mean, that could be part of it too, because it kind of reminds me of what we're talking about with like the whole like Men in Black thing, that they may not exist in this reality because they're doing weird things like the singing. You know, and maybe kind of along that same realm, that they have to do certain things in order to kind of exist in our reality. And maybe this thing is constantly always moving because that's how it kind of has to move in order to be able to be seen within our reality, because it has to almost like change its vibrational pattern to be seen, you know?
Yeah, very possible.
But just throwing that one out there. As with urban legends, it's crucial to approach the Cooney Cooney tale with a healthy dose of skepticism. While some eyewitnesses' accounts may sound convincing, they are often fueled by fear and the power of suggestion. It's essential to crucially examine these stories before accepting them as definite proof of the supernatural. The appearance of the Cooney Cooney may be the result of confusion and traditional scarecrow. It could also be a misidentification of wick drains. Another possible explanation might be thick clouds of fog, which tend to appear over rice fields during lunchtime.
So that's swamp gas.
Swamp gas, yeah. That's the Japanese version of swamp gas. It's clouds above rice fields.
Definitely cleared that up.
A third possibility might be hallucination, created by heat stroke and dehydration during hot summer days. I mean, my whole thing with this, and I think that this is definitely a theory that I wanted to throw in there, is the whole idea of like mirages. You know, if something is hot, you kind of have this like vibration that you see off in the distance, and more often than not, people like start hallucinating that into being something else. It's not necessarily that you're like full-blown dehydrated. It's just if it's a hot day, you're looking off in the distance, everything's kind of doing this like wiggle movement from the heat, then you kind of just, your brain starts putting stuff together and starts creating images. So again, middle of hot summer days, edges of rice fields, white kind of wisp. I kind of feel like there's also the possibility that this thing could fit into the category of a hallucination in the same sense as like a mirage would be.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Cause I mean, even if you're, you know, looking across a parking lot on a hot day and you see kind of like the wavy fog almost. So, I mean, yeah, that's a really good theory, I think.
So fun side story. When I was like six, I thought I had superpowers cause I could see heat. Deadass. And I ran around my house for a while wearing a towel around my neck and like a stick. And I thought I was like a superhero. It was great. I just had to drop that in. It was like one of those forgotten memories that just got brought up from that.
Well, hey, come down south here. We'll show you some heat that y'all ain't got up there.
We get that humid heat. I mean, I guess you're by the water, so you get some humid heat too. But like when I went down to Tennessee, it was like 105. And at least where I was at in Nashville, it was like the dry heat, at least when I was there. So it was like the 105 felt like the equivalent of like 80, 85 in Michigan, because it's just like wet, sticky hot up here. So like heat's a little bit different, but I'm sure you get that because you're right by the ocean. You get that sticky, humid heat too.
Well, so where I live now is about 2 hours, 3 hours inland. But where I grew up was like right on the water, and it's like 10 degrees hotter here in the summer than it was where I grew up. Cause I mean, obviously this is a bigger city, so there's more concrete and all that kind of shit. But yeah, like the breeze off the water makes a huge difference. Number one. And number two, I've never been to Nashville, but Gatlinburg, Tennessee is the hottest damn place I've ever been in my entire life. So I'm with you on that.
Dude, I mean, at least off the ocean, maybe the difference is the fact that it's a big, wide open area, so it doesn't heat up as much, so maybe you get a little bit more of a cool breeze off of it. Michigan, at least with having the big lakes all around us, they're probably small enough bodies of water that they can really start to like heat up during the summer, so maybe that contributes to a lot of our humidity. But yeah, fucking Tennessee, dude, that's like a whole other level. But we're saying that from an East Coaster perspective, man. You get into the middle of like the desert, you go to like Death Valley, bro, that's like a whole other level of hot. I don't think either of us can really fully imagine.
Isn't that what everybody says? It's dry heat.
It's dry heat, but it's like fucking what? 120, 130? That's like a whole other level, man. Like, shit.
Might see some Cooney Coonies.
You'll be seeing more than that off in the distance, man. You'll be seeing a mirage of just a bunch of different cryptids just flailing and coming at you, man. Be in the middle of the desert and think you're having a religious experience because you have all these like creatures coming at you from a distance.
How many people have we talked about that, you know, went out to the desert and saw shit?
Hey, man. Jack Parsons, prime example, man. Mm-hmm. Blowing shit up in the middle of the desert, jacking off, Jack. And seeing mirages, man.
I bet he would fuck the hell out of a Cooney Cooney.
I just imagine him like jacking off in the middle of the desert, you know, shooting off a rocket, getting some heat exhaustion because of the fact that the rocket was so hot. And then off in the distance, he's like, I have done something. There they are. There's the creatures I summoned. And it's not a creature at all. It's just heat off in the distance.
There you go. We figured it out.
So going into the first-hand encounters, the first one's like the main story that everybody talks about on the internet. And then the other two, I kind of just paraphrased up a little bit because it wasn't super expensive. Didn't have too much on it. But the main issue that I end up having with this, there's a lot of stories about it, but the problem is they don't necessarily translate from English because most of them are in Japanese. So like I was sitting there trying to go on Japanese sites talking about this stuff, and I ended up having to like translate it from Japanese, and I did that through like a handful of pages, and it's like when you're just trying to find like the best stories, that becomes really time consuming really quick. So I ended up just going back into the English, taking the best English stories besides this first one, because on every website I looked at that was in Japanese, this was the main story. So just so all the listeners know, if any of the wording comes out weird on this one, it's because I literally took the story, put it through Google Translator, and made it for myself in English. So some of these words might not like line up perfectly properly, but just a forewarning, that's what happened with this one. But yeah, of course, we got to get into these first-hand encounters. So let's hop right in.
Let's get into them.
This is in first person, just so everybody knows. This isn't me, so I'm just going to throw that out there. My parents used to bring my brother and I to visit my grandparents during Bon Festival, which is a Japanese Buddhist custom to honor the spirits of one's ancestors. This Buddhist Confucian custom has evolved into a family reunion holiday during which people return to their ancestral family places and visit and clean their ancestors' graves. And it's also when the spirit of ancestors are supposed to revisit the household altars. But hopping back in, we rarely have a chance to see her as she lived in the countryside far away in a place named Akita. As we arrived to our grandparents' house, we went out to play. The air was fresher compared to the air in the city. Feeling the breeze brushing my cheeks, I ran around with my brother in the field. The sun was high in the sky, and the breeze was ruined by a stifling heat. "Why is it so hot?" I muttered. While I was grumbling about the weather, my brother was staring at something far away in the field. "What's wrong with that scarecrow?" I asked. "It isn't a scarecrow. Look farther," he replied. I squinted across the field. I could barely see a white figure, about the size of a human, wiggling. "Maybe it was a new scarecrow invented by the farmers. It must be the wind that makes it move," I said. Just when I finished my sentence, the wind stopped, and it still kept wiggling. "Hey, it's still moving. What the heck is that?" my brother said in fear. He then ran back to the house and returned with a pair of binoculars. "Let me have a first look. You'll be next." He puts the binoculars up to his eyes with excitement. Just when he put on the binoculars, his expression changed. His face grew paler and was sweating profusely. "What did you see?" I asked. "You wouldn't want to know," he replied slowly, and that's written as he's like staggering. Without another word, my brother dropped the binoculars and walked home with his trembling legs. Filled with curiosity, I picked up the binoculars. I was too scared to look into the binoculars. Across the field, the thing is still there, just wiggling. It didn't feel right. A glance would not hurt, I tried to convince myself. Just then, I was putting on the binoculars. My grandfather snatched the binoculars. "You shouldn't look at that thing. Did you see it? Did you look at it?" my grandfather demanded furiously before I said anything. "No, not yet," I said in a meek voice. "That's good," my grandfather replied with a sigh of relief. I was then brought back to the house without knowing anything. When I reached the house, everyone was crying, except my brother. He was laughing and wiggling, just like that thing in the field. Seeing my brother in that condition sent a chill down my spine. "It is better to leave him here. Your house would be too cramped for him. The neighbors will be terrified too. Just leave him here for a few years, and we'll leave him in the paddy field," grandfather said. I burst into tears. It wasn't him anymore. He was my brother, but now he was just a thing. The next day, I left Akita with my parents. "He will change back to what he used to be, right?" I muttered while looking at the field. Thinking about the past, I put the binoculars up to my eyes. So kind of short form story, but that's like the main one that gets circulated. Got any comments on that one? I mean, it was kind of a little bit of stuttering, like I said, because I translated over from Japanese, but hopefully I got the point across.
Yeah, I think you definitely did. Just kind of the thing that struck me about this, almost as if like staring at these things could potentially, you know, put you down the road to turning into one of them, almost kind of like a Wendigo type situation. So I wonder if, you know, this, again, like a recurring archetype, this idea of almost becoming what you fear. So I don't know if there's anything there. It just kind of reminded me of, you know, Wendigo lore, and this boy seems to have been like taking on the attributes of this thing after looking at it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know, like, I'm assuming that it was partly from like the madness, and I feel like the madness made it so that he started like wiggling and taking on characteristics of it. So I wonder if like the madness, again, could be like you were saying with the Wendigo thing, that essentially like infects your brain, because like the way you're describing, I didn't put two and two together, but now I'm kind of seeing that it does kind of fit along the same lines as a Wendigo, but the only difference is that you're just viewing it rather than doing a deed to become it, but it kind of reacts the same way past that.
Yeah, definitely not like a one-to-one corollary, but I don't know. Just seemed to me like there might be a little something there.
Yeah, there's something there. Something close. That's touching the lines of it.
Nugget.
So hopping into the second encounter, and like I said to everybody, I kind of paraphrase these ones up, but when the narrator was in the fourth grade, they attended a summer camp for swimming lessons. On the last day of camp, unfortunately, a typhoon was approaching, and they had to stay in their rooms. The narrator was looking out the window at the ocean when they saw a white object moving in a mysterious way. At that moment, the classmate who was looking out the window with the narrator let out a strange voice. The teacher took the classmate to the hospital, but the classmate never came back. It was later discovered that the classmate had quit swimming lessons due to brain damage. The narrator was nearsighted and couldn't really see the white object, so they were lucky that they didn't fall victim to the Kuni Kuni's abilities.
You know what this one reminds me of? Do you remember in, I think it's Harry Potter in the Chamber of Secrets, when like the basilisk is petrifying everybody, but like nobody dies because they like saw its reflection in a puddle or in like a mirror or something? Like, this is the same thing. Like, the one kid was fucked, but this other one, because he was blind, you know, he was good to go, man.
I love the fact that in this story, they actually added the detail that, because I was like, when I first was like reading through this, I'm like, how come they both saw it, but only one was affected by it? And then like the last line of the story was that the narrator was nearsighted. So I was like, all right, or at least they threw that detail in there. Otherwise, I would have been like, what's going on with this story?
Yeah, it's some basilisk shit going on.
And jumping into the last firsthand encounter. One day when the narrator was a high school student, he was having a normal conversation with a friend when his mother came home, opening the door briskly and told him that they should not go out in the rice field. The mother had seen a shimmering white object. Just for fun, they went to the rice paddy and found a mysterious white figure shaking and moving its arms and legs in the paddies. They were so frightened that they ran home crying, reluctantly, without experiencing the full effects of the Cooney Cooney. These stories are really short. They're, like I said, they're like short form stuff. I mean, if they are legitimate encounters, sometimes it is as simple as that. I mean, you have stuff with like Sasquatch, where people just have like the simple like road crossing experiences.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's kind of like a two-way thing that they're short form stories. So it's like they could be stories, or they're kind of also written in the same format that they're such like a close little brush with it, and then it's done and over with, that it does kind of fit the like narrative on most people's like cryptid and creature encounters, that it's usually not this full-blown crazy story. It's more so just like seeing these things from a distance or having like a quick 2-second experience, and then that's like the end of it, and then they just spend the rest of their life questioning what the hell they even saw in the first place.
Yeah, and I know, you know, you had to translate a lot of these, but I did think it was kind of interesting that it specifically used the word shimmering in that last one. So that kind of gets back to like the pixelated glimmer man, like type creatures, entities, the predator type shit that we talk about all the time. But again, I'm sure that was just a translation thing, but still interesting nonetheless, I think.
I mean, again, it still kind of like matches in with a bunch of different like archetypes on this thing. Like, I mean, there's definitely like the seemingly possibly interdimensional factor to this thing. But there's also, just like I was kind of saying a little bit earlier, the whole fact that this could simply be like a Japanese like ghost story, you know, that maybe people see like a mirage and they created like these stories from it. Or maybe there is something to the land getting into like elemental spirits. Maybe there is some type of like ghostly being that haunts like farms, rice fields, all of that, maybe because of like turning up the dirt, messing up the ground, stirring up the ground. And I mean, we've talked about that a million times when it comes down to the like Native American stuff, that when people start stirring around the ground, that's when they end up having issues with stuff resurfacing.
Yeah, so I think that's definitely a good point. Like, we've talked about disturbing the earth a lot and how, you know, paranormal things seem to happen once the earth is disturbed, whether by like construction or, you know, the burial grounds type stuff, anything like that. The other point that I think is really interesting about this story is, with a lot of this urban legend stuff, it strikes me as almost like a chicken and egg type situation. You know, is this just a story? And like we were talking about earlier, you know, something kind of latched onto it and, you know, took over the story and used it for its own purposes. Or, like we talk about all the time, is there some, you know, basis or nugget of fact in a lot of this stuff? And it could just be, like we say all the time, people describing indescribable things with the best language they have. And this gets twisted and game of telephoned into these urban legends. So that's what I think is really interesting about these urban legends. Because, you know, we've got Bigfoot, we've got aliens, we got things like that. There's a very defined, you know, kind of framework, if you will, for what these things are. And with these urban legends, it's much more nebulous, it seems like. So I think while a lot of people would probably consider these just, you know, scary stories people tell each other, maybe there's a little bit of basis of fact in there somewhere. So
I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to bring that up too, that it seems like when you dig into most urban legends, yes, it ends up getting exploited like crazy, but there is still like a slim piece of something that was the framework for it beginning. where, you know, maybe it was something as simple as like a woman had lost her husband or something. So she like used to walk around the edge of the rice fields or something like that, trying to like remember him or something. And maybe she like went mad because of missing her husband. And so people kind of started blending parts of the story together where you have this white, ominous human object, which could have been a woman in a white dress, walking around her area that went mad because she missed her husband. And then when you have people telling that story for a couple generations, and then it moves over to another thing, and then it kind of just mixes into translation where it stops becoming she went mad, and it became others go mad if you see this thing, and then it takes on like a whole characteristic of its own. And then a second it touches the internet, people start adding in their ideas, their insight on it. And then you also have the possibility of people seeing multiple things, but fitting them into the same category. And then you have like 10 different facts behind them that aren't necessarily about the same creature, but they may look similar. So people start blending all the lore together within one creature, which we've talked about with the Wendigo, Pale Crawler, and Rake thing.
Well, and what it reminds me of too, is we talked about, you know, we've done a lot of Dogman type stuff on the show at this point. And we talked about how, you know, there's these ancient werewolf legends in basically every culture. And the whole idea of, okay, this thing stood up and walked like a man could have got twisted into, it's a man that turned into this thing. But a lot of these archetypes and these stories we talk about, like the, you know, the wild man or the canine, things like that, these are ancient. They go back hundreds or thousands of years. What if things like this is almost like mythology being created in real time, and through the internet and technology and things like that, we just don't put it in the same, again, framework that we do these ancient tales, because we just don't have the hundreds of years of mythology to kind of put these encounters into. So I think that's kind of interesting. I mean, maybe in 50 years we'll look back and this will be the new hot cryptid, you know?
Yeah, I mean, for all you know, I mean, just something else I want to throw in too. You got to remember how like war torn Japan was for centuries, that they had a bunch of different people coming from the mainland, like China and everything, coming over to Japan. There was a bunch of different like clan battles within Japan. So there's been like death all over the islands of Japan. So there's also the possibility of just restless spirits existing around that may be angry because they died in battle. So maybe like they're, you know, fuck you after they've already died, is that they come after people because maybe they think they're still alive. Maybe they think they're enemies. Maybe they're like sitting at the edge of the field because the idea is that they're trying to like watch over the field to see if the enemy's coming. And when they see the enemy, they react in like a supernatural way. So even beyond like the elemental spirits, it's just, again, think about how much death has been around Japan and how many like restless spirits could be there. And even beyond like the war stuff, I mean, think about how many tsunamis that they've dealt with throughout the years that have just wiped out hundreds of people. I mean, going back into when they even before they had recorded history in Japan, you know, there could have been like ridiculous ones that almost took out like a whole island of people. And the hard part about Japanese history is the fact that when you start digging into it, there's this weird spot where it's like before everything, before they're really like fully documenting stuff, it was all like folklore-ish. And then it got to a point where it started kind of getting into the real history. But when you talk to people about the history of Japan, there's this split in the middle where it's like you can't necessarily separate the spiritual with the history itself, because that's when you get into like all the yokais and everything, is that they all blend in with the history of Japan. And that's kind of like where it's kind of expanded and fluctuated from since, is that their entire culture is based on their history and their folklore stories of what has happened in the past to begin with.
Yeah, but I think that could be true of a lot of cultures, and we've just accepted these things as fact, you know, and maybe they're just more upfront about, you know, this is folklore, this is stories, these are things we tell each other, where, you know, more westernized people, everything has to be a fact or not a fact. You know, it has to be a story or it has to be a historical event. And, you know, I think that's what's interesting about maybe the more Eastern way of thinking, is there's a lot of gray area there. So maybe they're onto something that we're not over here.
I mean, I find it almost kind of strange with, I mean, maybe it's because the people have obviously like altered and changed over time, but the fact that like, at least the way we view Japan now, they're very intelligent, futuristic type society. So it's like, considering how like technologically, scientific, whatever you want to call it, minded they are now, I'm surprised that they don't like split it, because people still talk about all the old yokai and all that stuff like their actual physical things. And I mean, of course, you know, we're on the side that we definitely believe in the possibility of these types of things. So maybe just considering the fact that, again, they are known for being a rather intelligent culture of people, maybe there's a reason why they don't split this stuff up. Maybe it's because people are legitimately seeing all this type of stuff, trying to explain it through science, not coming up with good answers. So they just kind of leave it as this ominously explained stuff.
Yeah, like we say all the time, if you let yourself entertain the idea that there could be something truly strange going on, makes all this kind of stuff a lot easier to believe, in my opinion.
Ain't that the truth? So hopping into the very end of this, it's important to note that the Kunikuji legend remains deeply ingrained in Japanese culture, further perpetuating its widespread notoriety. It has been a cultural touchstone not to be taken lightly. Remember, urban legends like these can often teach us something about the fears and anxieties that permeate a society. As we part ways, I encourage you to share your thoughts and experiences with urban legends. They are woven into the tapestry of our existence, offering glimpses into the human imagination and the unknown realms that lie beyond our comprehension. And with that, again, we want to dig into some more of these urban legends. So if you guys, you know, I mean, urban legends, you can find certain things on the internet, but a lot of these urban legends are kind of specific to certain areas. So if anybody has any really interesting urban legends from their area, I don't care what country you're from. Clearly we have, like I said, a following in China. If you guys just simply send me a message, even if it's in Chinese, Mandarin, I can translate it, bring it over, do some research on it. But I want to dive more into these off the wall urban legends that aren't typically talked about in English, because I think that they're absolutely fascinating. And I mean, even within English, I want to hear some more urban legend stories from Australia, because again, we have to bring them into the fold, considering we have so many people listen to the show over in Australia.
Yeah, this urban legend thing was fun. I think this would be kind of a good unofficial series, maybe to go about, like
urban legends around the world.
Legends, yeah, exactly. So yeah, I'm all for it. So. This one was really interesting. Thank you for kind of taking the lead on this and doing all the legwork. I feel like I learned something today, so thank you for that.
Of course, man. Like I said, I'm trying to mix it up, bring some new stuff into the fold. I see a lot of podcasters. I mean, there's only so many like cryptid stuff that everybody kind of like rotatingly talks about and stuff. So I'm just trying to bring stuff into the spotlight, because it seems like every time I again do these like off the wall episodes, people really dig on them, because again, it's not stuff you hear all the time. So I just want to make sure I want to keep digging into stuff like this, because I find it absolutely fascinating. And again, especially the fact that it's something new that I haven't really heard any other podcast talk about, just makes it that much more interesting, you know, because we can really throw in thoughts and ideas without feeling like we're saying the same thing that everybody else is saying about the same topic, you know.
Yeah, like we said, what are we going to say about Mothman that hadn't already been said?
But, exactly.
Hey, we might could say some stuff about the Kunikuni.
Exactly. And start tying it into other stuff that we've already covered on the show, because that's how we do.
There you go.
Gives you a reason to all go back and listen to our previous episodes, of course. And with that, if you guys really enjoyed this episode, which I really hope that you guys did, I put a lot of effort into this because I want to bring you guys something special. Don't forget to leave a review or rating for the show on iTunes or Spotify. 5 stars preferably, but you know, give an honest opinion. And if you guys give a 5-star review, of course, we'll read on the show, give you a big shout out. And of course, share the show through word of mouth with a friend. If you think anybody might enjoy the whole show or a particular episode, just share the shit out of the show. It's the only way the show is going to continue to keep growing. And by leaving those reviews, ratings, interacting with the show, it's going to keep boosting us up in the algorithms and make it so that more people are able to see the show. And the more community that we have based behind the show means the more of these off-the-wall urban legends we could possibly bring into the fold, more people interacting with our big events that we do, like the Cryptid Brawl Tournament. But again, the only way we're going to get that way is with all of your guys' help. So anything you guys do, we greatly, greatly appreciate.
And as always, you guys know how the internet works. Do the internet things. Contact us through email, social media, the submission forms, all that good stuff. And any fan art or anything like that you guys want to share, or if you want to sponsor the show, be a guest on the show, or have us as a guest on your show, just reach out to us, get up with us. We're not hard to find.
We don't bite much. I mean, a little bit, but not that much.
Unless you want it.
Yeah, unless you want it, exactly. But that's Bizarre Encounters After Dark, and you got to pay extra to get access to that OnlyFans. Of us just biting people. That's what it is. That's what our OnlyFans is now. We've fully moved it over to not you paying us to keep our clothes on, but just us biting random people in public. I don't know. People got fetish for things. Everybody has any kind of weird quirk. So if you got a weird quirk for watching people bite other people, Bizarre Encounters only fan.
When we were in West Virginia, your son did try to lick my toes. So
that is a little weird. Dude, he tries to lick his own toes. So, I mean, like, ugh. And he's got some ranch feet.
He's like, what, 2 years old? So, I mean, it's not as weird as I probably worded it, but
I mean, you got to experience the world in some way, shape, or form, and some kids just choose to experience the world through tasting it, I guess.
Hey, you gonna learn today?
Gonna learn today about them ranch feet. That's what my daughter calls them, because he's got some nasty fucking feet, bro.
Nasty little bitch.
And everything that we mentioned, of course, is all available in the link tree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, I have been the one, the only Shane Squatch.
And I've been Orin.
And guys, I got to tell you every single episode, because just in case you forget, just in case we got some new listeners. But guys, always remember to stay bizarre, because we love you for it. Always bizarre. Bizarre. Bizarre.
Nasty little ranch feet.